Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoCellacast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Saturday, December 23rd, 2006, and this is show number 75. I'm actually recording the podcast a whole day early because I wanted to be able to spend some more time with my family on Christmas Eve. I'm picking up my mom tonight from the train so that we'll be able to spend the holiday together, so that's going to be good. Then on Christmas morning, we jump in the car and we drive about 4 hours to go spend a couple of days with Steve's family. It's a great time for us, and everybody just seems so much more relaxed than when the kids were little. Or wait, maybe it's me who seems so much more relaxed. Oh well, all I know is that I really enjoy the holidays now. Well, another reason I'm relaxed is that I took a week off from work in between Christmas shopping, working out, washing and waxing cars, taking Kyle to get his driver's license. He passed! Yikes. I've been working on a new theme for podfeet.com. The first part was trying to figure out how do I create a kind of sandbox where I could play with the theme and not scare anyone who might be visiting the real site. Well, luckily I have this friend. Have I mentioned Bart before? Well, this time I only sucked up about 4 hours of his life to figure this out. We were able to build a WordPress installation right on my Macintosh. This has been great. I've felt so much more freedom to really mess around with things. The main idea of the change to the website is that I want to get the beautiful artwork that Ryan in Hawaii created for me. I want that to be the header for the site. The other things I want to do involve having a more modern theme that'll support the installation of widgets, which allow you to do things like ads and badges. We do need some stinking badges. Affiliate links, that sort of thing. It probably doesn't mean too much to you right now, but I've been struggling with an older theme that doesn't really allow me to do creative things that I'd really like to be able to do and everybody else gets to do. The fun thing is that now I'm mucking around in PHP and MySQL and CSS and, you know, I can hardly even spell HTML for crying out loud. That's wonderful. The fun thing about playing around in WordPress is that as long as you keep a pristine copy of what you're working with, you can make huge mistakes that make you go, "Yeah!" and then just put it back the way it was and go on your merry way. So stay tuned for a new look and feel, which will hopefully make it a bit more obvious what this whole podfeet.com website is about. I got an email from listener John with a great holiday tip, and it fits in great with our Google series. Here's his email. Allison, I'm a longtime listener. I know in your last show you mentioned Google Earth. If you've not been there, you might want to look at earth.google.com/Santa. I figure you probably already came across it, but in case you had not, I thought I would mention it. I also want to thank you for all you do to bring us a podcast each week. Happy holidays, John. Well, John, I had not heard of it, and so I checked it out. For those of you who haven't been there yet, head on over to the link and you'll be given two downloads, one for the latest version of Google Earth and one for a Santa tracker and present hunt. Run over there right away so you can see Santa make his trip around the world on Christmas Day. Thanks for the tip, John, and nice to hear from you, and thank you for your kind words. You know how well that works at keeping me going. Well, that's a great segue into our latest, the next installation of our Google products review. This is part four. Let's start with Google Images. This next tool is one of my personal favorites. You may very well have heard of it before, but there's a couple of little tricks that make it even more fun. Starting at google.com/images, let's do a search for a giraffe. I could use a picture of a giraffe right about now. I'm not actually sure where Google gets all these images, but I like the way they display them. You get both photos and drawings, and below each image it tells you not only the location for the image, but also the size of the file, and most importantly, the pixel width and height. You notice I didn't say height. By the way, that's one of my pet peeves. Never say that to me. Speaking of pet peeves, have you ever searched for the perfect image and you thought you had it just right, and then you print out your file and realize it was a really low-res image? Or maybe even worse, you bring in an image and it's way overkill for your project because it's way too big. Well, Google Images solves this problem in the simple way only Google seems to be able to think of. There's a little pull-down in the blue bar up above the images that allows you to filter your search by the size of the images. Basically, you can choose all image sizes, large images, medium images, or small images. It's really handy, and I use it all the time. There's something else I bet you never noticed on Google Images. On that same blue bar across the top section, right next to where it tells you how many images it found, there's a link to get a definition of what you search for. Turns out if you click on that link, Google launches answers.com with a definition of giraffe in this case. It's an African ruminant mammal, by the way. I don't remember ever seeing that before, so it makes me wonder if it's new. That's about all I can milk out of Google Images, because most of you have probably already seen it, but if you haven't used it before, I highly recommended it. Google Local is next on the list, and it's available at google.com/local. Google Local is a tool that's designed to break one of the big barriers of the web. You know how easy it is to find anything you want on the web, say in Bolivia, but you happen to live in Croatia? But it's almost impossible to find something within driving distance of your house. Like, let's say you want this particular kind of paint because you're in the middle of painting your house. Well, you don't really want to get it from Bolivia if you live in Croatia, right? Well, Google Local works in conjunction with Google Maps. So, to illustrate, let's first pretend that I live in West Chicago, Illinois, at 100 Main Street. Let's also say I'm looking for pizza near my house. I go to google.com/local, and in the search window, I type in pizza near 100 Main Street, West Chicago, Illinois, and I hit search. I'm rewarded with a frame on the left that has several stores listed with nice little lettered flags next to them. And they correspond to nice little lettered flags showing on the map in the right-hand frame. I can also see a big green arrow showing me where my supposed house is, so I can see how far I'll have to go to get that hot, toasty pizza. Each of the stores also has a link to their website, if appropriate, has their phone number, and even star ratings. That must be from their shopping site. I'm not really sure, though. At this point, if I click on one of the nice little lettered flags, it even comes up with a thought bubble that I can click on to get directions to it from my supposed house on Main Street. One of the best things about doing these reviews of the Google tools is how much I'm learning. As I poke around trying to make sure I've explained everything, I keep finding things I'd never seen before. In this case, I've used Google Local for ages, but I learned a new trick in writing this review up. On that same thought bubble I got by clicking on the nice little lettered flag, I noticed under the name and the address of the store, there's a link that says, Send a Phone. Curious, I of course clicked it, and I was greeted with a place to type in my cell phone number and a pull-down to select my carrier. When I clicked Send, in just a few seconds, I heard my cell phone receive a text message, and it included the name of the store, address, and phone number. Man, that is really handy. I mean, how often have you found an address at home on your computer, but then you have to scribble it down on a piece of paper? How cool if you could just send the address and phone number to your phone. I will definitely use this feature, and hey, I already loved Google Local anyway. One other thing is, then one of the nice features of Google Local is it remembers where you said you lived or what the last address you chose from, and you can even store those addresses if you want as saved locations. So it's real handy. Whenever I go to Google Local and I type in something I want, I only have to type in pizza because it remembers where I live. I don't have to say pizza near 100 Main Street, West Chicago, Illinois. Anyway, hope you go over and check out Google Local. Well, the next one on the list is Google Maps, but I'm pretty sure if you've even been on the internet yet, you've probably been to Google Maps, so I think we'll skip it. It is integrated into a lot of the other features, like Google Local, so it's hard to miss anyway. Next up on the list is Google News. Now, my husband would probably tell you that I'm one of the worst people to possibly review a site like this, because I've actually been boycotting anything but technology or financial news these days. It seems that every time I turn the news on, it's a story like dead baby found on railroad tracks. Maybe I'm just unlucky that way, but I just really don't need to learn about that. But I am dedicated to the podcast, so I'm going to check out Google News. The site has 8 tabs down the left side to see the top stories. And the categories on those tabs are World, U.S., Business, Science and Technology. Oh, good, they've got a tab for me, so I'll be okay here. Sports, Entertainment, Health, and Most Popular. I was kind of wondering why it just said U.S. That seemed kind of American-centric. But then I noticed near the top, there's a pull-down for top stories, and the default was U.S. But if you hit the pull-down, there's about 20 other countries there, so you can set it for your own country if you like. I checked out the Science and Technology tab, and I found some really interesting stories. Did you know that Opera's been ported to the Nintendo Wii? Or that there was a Komodo dragon, a female Komodo dragon that had an immaculate conception? As usual, I digress. There's a search field for Google News, of course, as well as a news archive search, advanced news search, and a link to Google's blog search. The blog search isn't exactly part of the news search, but it's very interesting that they put it up there with the other links under the title of news. I know it's a big debate in the industry whether blogs can count as news if the blogger isn't a professional reporter, but I make no opinion. I just find the debate very interesting, and interesting that Google put it up there like that. Google News also allows you to subscribe to an RSS or Atom feed, and there's a link showing how Google News works on a mobile device through mobile.google.com. Hey, did you know they found a new type of black hole? Oh, maybe this news stuff isn't so bad. The next Google product is about as narrow as you could hope for. It's Google Patent Search at google.com/patents. Not everyone would have a need for this, but it's still pretty interesting. Patent Search at Google is, of course, beta. When it first comes up, it has the typical, simple Google interface, but it also shows 5 patents by their graphic image on the front page. When I went there, it had the incandescent electric lamp, advanced state-of-the-art movie theater, the egg crate, the contact lens, and the beer faucet. As tempted as I was to click on the beer faucet, I held strong and started with the incandescent lamp. I found that it was filed by inventor Thomas A. Edison on June 14, 1881. The patent number is 242897. Unfortunately, the full text is not available for this particular patent, but you can view a scanned image of the specifications. Get this, you can actually search within this scanned image of the specs. I tried searching on the word lamp, and it came up with 2 hits. I decided to check them both out to see why there were 2. The first one was a hit on the drawing itself. When I clicked on the second hit, it showed me in the specs all of the different times he used the word lamp, highlighted in yellow all over the page. That was really, really cool. That was great fun, but I had even more fun by searching for some of my father's patents. He was an engineer and had a few inventions, so I went down memory lane and checked out his patent on a windshield wiper blade structure. I enjoyed the drawing very much because I know for a fact he could not have drawn it. Oh, okay, he could have done the drawing, but the lettering was this marvelous script. And I know that he actually failed his first drafting class because his lettering was so dismal. Brilliant man, but could not write a perfect character if you held a gun to his head. I actually found 16 separate patents he did between the windshield wiper business and the railroad car business he was in before that. I really think it's tremendous that his patents from the 1960s and even earlier have been given this care, to be scanned in so that they're here forever. I think my mom will be really excited when she hears about this. I bet she didn't read about that in the Google book. Well, listener Bruce sent me an interesting link to a blog where a guy named David explains in great instructions how to photograph Christmas lights. There's a really long link in the show notes to his Strobist blog, and I'll spare you the long link. You could just read it in the show notes. David explains in the Strobist blog in only about 6 steps how to get much better photos of Christmas lights than you have ever done before. I don't want to snake his instructions, so I really encourage you to head on over to the site and read the instructions and give it a try. I did it, and I think I got a really cool shot because I took his advice. I put 5 photos in the show notes that illustrate the progress towards the ultimate goal. I started, like he suggested, right after sunset and took a whole bunch of pictures and eventually came out with 1 really, really neat-looking shot. So head on over to strobist.blogspot.com if you're interested in photography, and you can get all kinds of cool tips combined with a terrific sense of humor. Well, we all have too much to do, and we're all searching for an organizational model that will fundamentally change our disorganized behavior. We also all know that it's like the search for the Holy Grail. It's a necessary journey that none of us believes we will ever succeed at. And yet onward we search. Ta-da list from tadalist.com looks like it could be some fun to try out. I signed up for a free account, and on the sign-up page, I found something I really liked. They showed the web browser requirements. It says, Tada requires Internet Explorer 6.x, Safari, or Firefox. Internet Explorer 5.x won't work. Other browsers may work, but we make no guarantees. I think that this may be the very first time I've seen Safari listed as one of the most usable, browsers. Most stuff works on Safari, of course, but it was kind of nice to see it called out by name. Once you've created a username and login over at tadalist.com, it instantly takes you to the sign-up page. I know there's spam reasons why most sites email you or email you your login link, but it was refreshing to get instant gratification for once. Once I logged in, I was faced with one option: create new list. Well, I clicked on that, entered a name for the list, and then there was, instantly again, a field to enter the first to-do item. I typed it in and hit a carriage return, and it did exactly what I hoped it would do. It opened a field for the next item on my to-do list. This is perfect because no one starts a to-do list until they have three or more things to remember, right? Well, I entered quite a few to-dos, and then I saw a link up above that said reorder. This, again, could not have worked more intuitively. The instant I clicked on reorder, the little checkboxes to the left of the to-do items turned into the word drag. Well, what are you going to do with it? You're going to drag it, right? So I was able to drag my to-dos up and down until I had them in the right order. It was just perfect. As I was working on this list, I thought, man, you know what would be cool? It's if I could share this with my husband, making it not just a to-do list, but a honey-do list. Oh yeah, that would be cool. I look up in the menus. Sure enough, the next link available to me is called Share. When I hit Share, it said that there's two ways to share a list. The first one is to let trusted people view and change the list. Tada List sends them an email that includes a link to a private page where they can add, edit, and check items off this list. I sent my list off to both of my kids and my husband with a request for them to edit, delete, or add to it. My husband went in right away and added a few things to my list. That didn't work out quite the way I wanted it to. And he was able to do that without creating a login, which was, again, kind of cool. The second way you can do sharing is to just let someone view the list, but they can't edit it. That becomes a public to-do list. They give you a link so anyone can see this list to whom you've sent the link, of course. They do put in a caution that the public lists really are out there publicly, and they could be indexed by search engines, so make sure you're comfortable with that before you click the share button. You can create multiple lists, you can email yourself a copy of the list, and you can even be notified of changes to the list via an RSS feed. Let's just say for grins and giggles that you actually find the time to execute some of the actions on your to-do list. You can click a checkbox next to the item, and it becomes very teeny and goes to the bottom of the list with a nice, tidy little check mark in the box to make you feel like you accomplished something. I really think this is a swell little tool, and I might actually use it. I can't imagine how they could have made it more user-friendly, or any slicker or faster, or have any more features. Tada List is created by the folks over at 37signals.com. That's the number 37signals.com. So I think I'll be checking out more of their cool tools in the near future. Definitely check out tadalist.com if you want to get organized. Well, my dear friend Tim Verporten is the creator of the MacReviewCast podcast, which is on my Never Miss It list. I think I've mentioned it before, but it's really a fantastic show. He does more freeware and shareware tips in one show than I do in a month. I do go into a lot more depth on each one, but his is fantastic because you'll definitely learn about at least two or three that you want to try out every single show, guaranteed. Anyway, imagine how flattered I was when he asked me if I would consider doing a review for his show. He had a particular tool in mind for the review, but he didn't have enough time to do it himself, so he sent me a license key and let me loose with it. The review will be on his show sometime in the next couple of weeks, but I couldn't resist the urge to use it here as well. Here's the review I did for his show. Hi, Tim. This is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Hey, thanks so much for the opportunity to do a product review for you. Nothing I like better than a new piece of freeware or shareware. Well, Econ Technologies looks like they're doing some really interesting development for the Mac community. One tool that caught my eye was ImageCaster. As always on the NoSilicast, I like to look for software that solves a real problem. Many people find themselves needing, or sometimes just wanting, to create a webcam for any kind of reason. Some people want to keep an eye on things at their home while at work. Some want to show off some special place for the enjoyment of others. And don't forget the original webcam. I believe it was at a university where people wanted to know if there was coffee made before trooping way down the hall to get some. So they made a coffee cam. Now that we've established a need, let's head on over to econtechnologies.com to download and install ImageCaster. ImageCaster comes in two versions. Version 2.1, which is for OS 10.3 Panther and later, and there's a version 2.0.1, which works with Jaguar. I think it's really nice that they're taking care of those folks who maybe haven't seen a need to upgrade to the latest operating system. On the download site, they also include a manual, and while if you're a NoSilicast listener, you might have picked up on the fact that I don't always take advantage of written documentation, it is nice to note that if it's there if I do get desperate. ImageCaster is $30 shareware, and there's a demo version there as well. One thing I did think was odd was that even though I had a legitimate registered license key, every time I launched the application, it comes up with a message that says, "Evaluation copy. This copy is for evaluation only. It may not be sold, redistributed, or used for any other purpose." Well, the developer, when questioned on why they put this warning in, said, quote, "That's a full working version. Just gives a warning. The reason we like to give separate licenses to everyone is so I can trace codes directly to one person. Additionally, I want to know who is testing our software." Well, their logic is good as far as having separate license keys for people and being able to track it, but the implementation is wrong. I mean, why tell someone they have evaluation software if they paid for a real license? If I have a full license, I don't want to be told it's an eval license only. That doesn't make any sense. Well, let's dig in and play with it anyway. The first thing I like to do with a new application is simply stumble around the menus and see what I can do without reading the manual. If it's a well-written program, the defaults will give me something interesting, but lead me in to want me to explore changes to enhance my experience. The menu should also feature drag and drop when it seems natural. And of course, natural is defined as when I think it should be drag and droppable. Well, ImageCaster has a pleasing and clean interface with just 6 colorful buttons across the top and then 7 tabs right below that. First, there's a fun-looking options button that slides out a drawer to show you the options you have within the menus you're looking at. It'll only show options if they're actually available for that tab. I have to confess at this point that I did read the first couple of lines of the manual, which helped me understand the second button. It's a save button, which in the manual they explain that this tool is a document-based interface, by which they mean that you can put in a bunch of settings and it saves those in a document that you can reload later and will create the webcam interface you're looking for again. All right, let's get into how ImageCaster actually works. The first tab is called Source, which I ended up leaving alone because it recognized my eyesight right away. Even though it called it USB Video Class Video, I was able to verify that it was getting the video image from my eyesight. I left the changes for buffer and image attributes alone for now. The next tab is called Overlay, which is where you can add things to the image that will be shown on the web. Imagine that you're hoping to catch those taggers who keep putting graffiti on your retaining wall. Well, you'd want to be able to show the police what time they did it, right? The Overlay tab allows you to put the timestamp on the image. You can also put on the date, any text of your choosing, and a graphic. So remember I said if an application is well written, it will have drag and drop when I want it? Well, I thought I ought to be able to drag and drop the overlays, and sure enough, that's exactly how it works. You simply grab the time and drag it onto your picture and put it right where you want it. On the Format tab, you can set whether the image that get uploaded from the camera to your website, you can set them to JPEG, to PNG, to a whole host of other options. This is also where you name the file that will be part of your web link, so name it something interesting or at least memorable. The default is camfile.jpg, which didn't really ring for me as memorable, but I left it alone. Now that the image format and name have been chosen and the overlay has been set, it's time to prettify the image. The tab titled webpage is where you can choose a template for the image. You can put the image in a wood frame or make it look like it's part of a chalkboard, or maybe you fancy making it look like an image on a CRT. This is also where you set the refresh interval, which is how often it'll be refreshed on screen for your viewer's pleasure. There's even a little countdown on screen on the video site when it tells you how soon it's going to be till the next refresh is. That's kind of a nice feature. There's a ton more options in on this tab. All kinds of things you can do, like a full gob of text you can put in for a sidebar. You can add headlines, subheadlines, a whole bunch of other fun, a lot of fun things to go do. One of the most intelligent features of ImageCaster is that they allow you to set the time of day by the day of the week that you want this webcam to be delivering content. You can have it only run during the middle of the night, say on Saturdays and Sundays, or maybe you want noon to 3 on Wednesdays, whatever you like, complete freedom to say when it's going to be doing its recordings. You can also set how often you want a screen snapshot to be taken. Now that all these options have been set, you have to actually put the webcam shots somewhere, right? That's where the destination tab comes in. You enter your web host, your username and password, along with the path of where you want it to go on the site, and a few other options. Like I said, I like the default options on things, so I threw up a webcam on my website, and it worked just like it should have. I had set it to just watch me all afternoon on Saturday while I was working on my podcast, but I sent the link to Tim, and he sent me a couple of messages about how dorky I looked while I had this thing running. Actually, he said I looked like I was working too hard. I figured out later on in the menus that you can choose a static image, so I put up a pretty picture of some Christmas lights I took. You can check it out at podfeet.com/nosillacast/sidepage_crt.html. That's too long to remember. Don't worry, there's a link in the show notes, of course. I think ImageCaster is very easy to use. Most of the menu picks are very obvious, has drag and drop in all the right places, and it delivers a webcam image just like it promises. Even though their evaluation copy warning is a bit odd, the application works flawlessly and seems well worth the $30 shareware fee. I hope this review helps someone out there to find the tool they need for a good webcam. And for more in-depth reviews like this, check out the NoSillaCast at podfeet.com. Thanks a lot, Tim. Bye-bye. Wow, that was so much fun doing a review for him. He's given so much to me over the last couple of years. It's really fun to finally get to give back. I enjoyed that. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this last show before Christmas. I hope you all have a happy and safe holiday with the warmth of friends and family around you. Thank you for a great year of podcasting. I love all the great feedback that makes me feel all warm and fuzzy. Keep it up by sending emails to allison@podfeet.com and voice recordings to nosillacast@gmail.com. And add some comments over at the forum at podfeet.com/forums. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.